Welcome to the podcast To Be Named Later, where we explore the world a conversation at a time. Sit back and enjoy. Here are your hosts, Chris and Kelly.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the podcast To Be Named Later. Back again with my co-host, Chris, for another week. Chris, how are you doing?
Doing really good, man. Excited to talk some sports.
Right on. Hey, so we had the big game there in Georgia, Tennessee and Georgia. Game didn't live up to the hype, but I don't know if that was a case of Tennessee not being as good as we thought or Georgia just being one heck of a football team. I mean, I go back to their first game and they took care of Oregon 49-3, and they've kind of been on a mission ever since.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia's good, man. I mean, they've been number one all year in the AP, and I didn't disagree with the rankings when they first came out, the college football playoff rankings, and had Tennessee number one. They are fresh off of that victory over Alabama, and I don't blame them for putting them there. But the AP's had Georgia number one. I think they started at number three, maybe, week one. I think Alabama was one and Ohio State was two. But pretty quick, as soon as they beat Oregon, they've been number one and they stayed number one. So, you know, you can make an argument that that game was number one versus number one, depending on which ranking you're looking at. And, you know, Georgia just handled them, man. They handled them up front. And I think the crowd played a huge factor in that game. You know, false starts, communication. Tennessee was just off. And part of that was players. And, you know, Georgia was the more physical team on the field. And we knew Tennessee's defense, you know, wasn't their strong suit. But offensively, it looked like they could score on anybody. And Georgia let us know that's not the case, or they're just not anybody.
Yeah, Georgia's defense, I don't know who can score on them.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, I'm wondering if maybe the Big Ten teams might match up a little better, might actually play a little. You know, Tennessee plays pretty open, man. They get you with the deep ball. And I don't want to say they're soft or anything. I mean, they still play in the SEC. They still got some big boys up front, but I just, you know, their style of play, I wonder if the matchup, you know, I say matchups make fights, and I just wonder if the matchup wasn't ideal for Tennessee, you know, and because, you know, that game kind of decided who's going to go to the SEC championship game, unless Tennessee can find a backdoor into the playoff, which they have a path to get there. I mean, they're not out of it. They're right now ranked fifth. And Ohio State and Michigan are going to play each other. TCU could definitely lose. They're going to have a case over LSU. They're going to have a case over Alabama. Depending on how things shake up, they might find their way back in potentially. But Georgia's obviously did themselves a favor by winning that football game.
Yeah, and you talked about the crowd. You know, I've a long time ago, and this was when the team was better, I was down in College Station for a Texas A&M game. Had just a little bit of a sense of football in the South, and this was a long time ago. You know, I'd love to be down at Georgia or someplace like that at least once just to see what one of these games is like. Those crowds are just wilder than I think I can even imagine.
Well, this is their life, you know what I mean? This is the whole town's life. And, you know, a lot of parts of the country, it's everybody. It's the entire town, and it goes all the way down into high school. And, you know, it's just it just means more, man. I mean, they live and die by their local teams, you know, whether it's their high school team on Friday night or their college team on Saturday morning. You know, their fall and early winter centers around the success of their football teams.
Yeah, they're fall, winter, and spring. Yeah. I remember, speaking of your entire life, how much life is there with Ohio State? I know they won again, but wow, they didn't look too good.
No, but, I mean, you know, they played in a monsoon. Yeah, no, they didn't look good. You're right about that. I mean, that game, I mean, they ended up pulling away and winning it comfortably in the end. But, you know, I actually was, you know, I was following that game on the side. I'm like, man, at some point you just believe, kind of like what Michigan did. I don't even remember, Michigan struggled early too. And, you know, Rutgers was giving them the business, they say, for the first quarter and a half of the game. And at half, it's like, oh, man, you know, between what Ohio State was doing and what Michigan was doing, it was like, man, I mean, you're talking about two top five teams that might both lose. And then Michigan ended up winning 52-17. So Ohio State, you know, they got the win at the end of the day. I mean, they held on to their spot in the rankings. They got the W, you know, and I've watched them play at other points in the season. They look like a good football team. I think they just had a bad game in, you know, really bad conditions.
Yeah, I was paying attention to that game as well, both the Michigan and the Ohio State games. And that Rutgers score, I really did think for a little while, like, wow, are they going to – is this the game? You know, they always talk about it where a team can stub its toe. And I was just kind of wondering at first, you know, will this be that upset? They happen. They obviously took care of business. With just 3 weeks left in the regular college football season, going to be interesting. Some big games coming up.
Oh, agreed, man. And so, you know, obviously the different, you know, league title games will decide a lot. But who gets there? You know, the way these things are set up, man, like a team like Tennessee, for instance, you know, that game with Georgia gave them their only path. You know, that's it. Georgia's not losing too, right? So, you know, that was it. That's your only, you know, one out to get to your, you know, title game. And there's going to be more like that. You know, Ohio State and Michigan play the last game of the year every year. They look like national powerhouses. They're number two and number three in the rankings. And one of them will win that game. One of them will go and throttle probably Illinois, potentially in the Big Ten championship game. And the other one's going to kind of be left out in the cold. And it's like, well, we were really good. You know, we lost to the, you know, number two team in the country or the number three team in the country. But will they be able to, you know, this is why it's so – I just can't wait for them to expand the playoffs, you know. And these – a lot of these games are road games, true road games. I mean, that was a big deciding factor in that Tennessee-Georgia game. The crowd was rabid, man. And you know, Ohio State and Michigan, you know, it was a pretty distinct advantage to the home team. And, you know, this year it's at the Horseshoe, so – you know, that gives a pretty big edge to Ohio State. But what happens if they met on a neutral field? You know, would it still be the same outcome? I don't know.
Yeah, I think, and I can't remember off the top of my head if the Rose Bowl is one of the championship sites. The winner of that Michigan-Ohio State game is probably going to the playoffs. The loser is probably going to end up playing somebody like Oregon.
Yeah, if Oregon doesn't get in, you know, I think if Oregon wins out, they likely will have a spot of the four, just the way things are. Because nobody else is going to, you know, Oregon finishes, they play Washington. The big one is going to be against Utah, which is a really good football team. And then at Oregon State, and then they'll have, assuming they win all three of those, they'll have a Pac-12 title game. And, you know, if they win out, that's four games that are all winnable for them. If they do happen to win all four, I think they find their way into the playoff. So Tennessee just doesn't have that big marquee game, you know, that they can hang their hat on. They finish up Missouri, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt. And unless...
Yeah, it's just not a compelling path. Like,
yeah, unless Georgia somehow just... falls flat on their face, they're not going to get that SEC championship game.
So who's Georgia got left on their schedule?
Let me check for you. Georgia is going to play at Mississippi State, at Kentucky, which Kentucky's no slouch. But they should handle them. I mean, Georgia's a better team. And then they finish with Georgia Tech, who they should throttle, you know, 72-3 or something. So, but then they'll get one more marquee game. Right now, LSU, I believe, is the leader in the clubhouse with their big win. Boy, you don't want to go to Death Valley at night, man. They say it all the time. And it's a real thing, man. Like, that is a different place.
Oh, yeah.
When the sun is down.
I don't, but if you look at those two schedules for both Georgia and Tennessee, neither one of them until the championship game has really a hard schedule left.
Yeah.
So I don't see how Tennessee can, unless Georgia loses, how Tennessee can jump ahead.
Well, I think the best case that Tennessee can make, and actually Oregon is in the same kind of the same boat. They're not trying to beat Georgia. You know, we only lost to Georgia. Let's all concede Georgia's the best team in the country, okay? I think that's the best case that both Oregon and Tennessee can make, is that Georgia is the best. Well, that's the only person we lost to, man. We're better than everybody else except Georgia. And so Georgia losing actually doesn't benefit them in my mind. I think the better case can be made that, hey, that's the only team we lost to, man, is Georgia. Give us another shot, you know. And Oregon already had their shot on a neutral field and got throttled by Georgia. Tennessee didn't have that. And so I think Tennessee's case would be a little better than Oregon's myself. But, you know, I think their best chance is to have Georgia just throttle everybody. And now they can make a claim because Ohio State and Michigan are – one of them's going to lose. And, well, I guess they could play to a tie, but one of them's going to lose, right?
No, they can't play to a tie.
Well, yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah, you're right. So they'll have to go for two. And so when one of those loses, I think Tennessee and Oregon are going to make the case like, hey, you know, you lost to the number two team. I lost to the number one team. And you know, it'll be close, man. I mean, the loser of the Ohio State-Michigan game, assuming Tennessee wins out and Oregon wins out, those are big assumptions to begin with, right from go, especially the Oregon side. You know, that's going to be tough, man. The other thing that can help their case is TCU. Boy, I love them, man. I like TCU. I actually put a little bet on TCU for a flyer. But, you know, they're going to play at Texas, okay? Texas is a really good football team, physical. Bijan Robinson is unbelievable, man. You know, that's a good, solid, well-built football team that TCU is – it's going to be a matchup issue again where TCU is a little bit faster. They play a little bit more wide open. They got a lot of team speed, but Texas is you know, the more meat and potatoes and the corn feds and a little more smash mouth. So we'll see which style wins that fight. And then they got Baylor, which also not currently ranked, but a really good football team. And then they'll finish with Ohio State. So it's possible TCU could lose to either or both of Texas and Baylor. And then, you know, that might open the door for an additional team to get in. One of these losers, you know, Michigan, Ohio State, Tennessee, Oregon.
Who's TCU's last game?
Iowa State.
Okay. They're always an interesting team, man. They're like the kind of the quiet of the top four. You don't hear
them. To watch.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you just don't hear. I think because they're not as you know, elite all the time as some of the other schools. They get up there and then they kind of go back every so often. But you just don't – I'd say of the top four, they're the quietest of them.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, they're doing it in dramatic fashion. TCU's the team that I've been, you know, focusing in on. That's the game I choose to watch. It's just a more entertaining football. You know, it's a lot, you know, the Ohio State's in you know, the Big Ten in general are just kind of like, eh, you know. Whereas TCU, man, they like to drop down by, you know, 10, 14 points to start their game. They like to spot their opponents some points and then come charging back late. And, yeah, it just makes it kind of a fun game to watch. So, But they, yeah, they've been definitely quiet in their 9-0.
I will say all up, college football's really been pretty good this year. It is actually pretty good almost every year, where almost every Saturday you get 2, 3, 4 games that are exciting.
Well, what's helped this year, man, is the kind of I don't even know if I'd call it a fall, but I mean Clemson has one loss. They just experienced they got handed, man. Notre Dame had their way with them, so beat them in every facet. But you know, Alabama and Clemson, you know, they've fallen off a little bit. A couple other guys have risen up, and you know that parity and adding some additional teams makes it exciting, man. Now instead of having 4 or 5 that have a shot, now there's more like 8 or 9.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, we talked about it last week, but I'm, for all these reasons, I'm really excited when this playoff expands. We got 3 weeks left. We'll see. And obviously, you know, there's always that rivalry week, the last game of the year for most schools, and then the championships. It should be really interesting to see where we land on a lot of this.
Well, a lot of teams can still move. So, you know, some of them we discussed, they're kind of assuming everything goes to form, their fate's kind of set, right? But then there's other teams like USC, for instance. USC's got, you know, they finish with UCLA and Notre Dame. You know, they win both of those. You know, man, you got to take notice, right? And So I mean, there's some teams with some schedule ahead of them. You know, LSU we're not even talking about. LSU's number 7, and I don't think anyone really believes that they're comparable to Georgia. But you know, if everyone holds serve, they get their shot to prove it. You know, they are going to represent the West if they win out, and they'll be playing Georgia. You know, who's to say they can't beat them?
Yeah, you can't never count them out. I mean, it is, I would say, unlike the Big Ten, where usually the winner of the West is pretty much always going to get hammered by the East. An SEC championship game, that championship game is usually a little more evenly matched.
Yeah, and you know, they recruit the same areas and have comparable talent usually. Obviously, Georgia has an edge. I mean, they've shown it. They're good. They have that championship experience, and you know, they just played in a big game. But it's a football game, man. It's a funny-shaped ball. You know, you only got to win one. And if you get there, if you get a chance, you know, LSU has a lot of talent on that football team, and you never know. They just got to win one game.
You know, we'll see also, I mean, Oregon's got two tough, I mean, they're favored in both of them, but they're very, Washington and Oregon, that's a pretty big rivalry up in the Pacific Northwest, you know.
They do get the benefit of playing that game in Eugene, so that it helps, and they're the better team, and they're going to be at home, and they also have Utah at home, so they'll be favored. But I mean, like you said, man, I mean, that's two tough games.
And then the Oregon State game, you know, those in-state games for sure are anything can. I you know, it's a cliche, but like, no matter how good or bad a team season is, you can make it by beating your in-state rival.
So. Oh yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and honestly, man, I mean, we'll get into some NFL at some point, Kelly, you know, but between the two, you know, I like them both. I just like football, man. I mean, but it's not even a contest, man. I mean, what college football is providing us in terms of excitement and big games and product on the field and just entertainment value, it is light years ahead of what the NFL is providing right now. It's just really not even close, man. NFL is just giving us garbage, man. Primetime games are garbage. The product they're putting out there is, I mean, it's hard to find a game that you're interested about. You know, I you know, look through the schedule and okay, which game do I want to focus on, right? And it's like, none of them. You know, nothing really interests me, man. It's hard with what the NFL's doing right now to get fired up about anything.
Well, all right, Mr. Grump. It's time for Get Off My Lawn.
All right.
What's got you cranked up this week, Chris?
Well, since we're in college, I'm going to stay here, man. And my get off my lawn for this week is judging college football teams based on the colors of their jerseys. And I think this week we saw Alabama lost at LSU. Clemson got beat down by Notre Dame. And when the rankings first came out, I'm talking just the college football rankings. I think a lot of us that, you know, and I'm not I don't do this professionally by any means. I'm just a fan. But how the hell is Clemson? I think they came in at number 4. And it's like, what? They don't look good to the eye. And then they also don't look good against not even challenging opponents. You know what I mean? They're just they haven't done anything. You know what I was more impressed by UCLA than I was Clemson. And yeah, they're number 4 because they're Clemson. And Alabama kind of similar, man. It's like, hey, we're Alabama. We get an automatic spot in the top 5, no matter who we've played or how good we look or what kind of football we're playing. We get an automatic pass. You know, and as long as Oklahoma hasn't lost, you know, it don't matter. I don't care who you've played. You're Oklahoma. You get a spot in the top 5. And even if you do have a loss, well, you're still Oklahoma. We'll still keep you in the top 10. And that's BS, man. I'm tired. We need another case for expanding the playoffs. But, you know, let's judge people based on who they've played, common opponents. How do they look on the field, man? I mean, you can see blocking and tackling and running and you know, to me, there was a couple of real standouts, and Tennessee was one of them, and they got that, you know, a high ranking, and I think they earned it. TCU was another one that I was like, hey, man, what they're doing on the field looks good. It looks better than what Clemson's doing. Looks as good or better than what Alabama's doing. You know, why are they 3, 4, 5 spots below them?
Related to what you're saying, Chris, there's another thing that I wonder how this will play out. When USC and UCLA come into the Big Ten, out of the Pac-10, they are going to be seeing a lot more of their games. Like, there is a bias against West Coast football. I firmly believe that now that I've moved back to the Midwest, because you just don't see as many Pac-12 games.
Yeah, and it's kind of always been that way. I mean, they don't call it a East Coast bias for nothing. I mean, that wasn't coined for no reason, right? And, yeah, you're right. And, you know, I wouldn't watch a game either, man, if I was in the Eastern time zone and, you know, USC, UCLA's kicking off at 7. Man, I stayed up till 1 to finish a football game. No chance, right?
Yeah, I mean, and then they do this stuff where they do Pac-12 after dark, you know, like, nah, man. Those games are kicking off at 10 o'clock on the East Coast, sometimes yeah. Even 11 o'clock.
Yeah. No, I understand. And, I've been on the West Coast most of my life. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to fathom where these opinions of the West Coast teams come from sometimes. But, you know, they haven't done themselves any favors, though, either, because when they've had their shots – they haven't made good. You know, when Oregon made the playoff, they got whomped. You know, when they played Georgia, they got whomped. You know, and it's like, you know, the few times that you've had an opportunity to make a case that, hey, man, West Coast has football teams as well, they really haven't shown well, historically anyway.
So I'll take a little bit of a different tack on Get Off My Lawn. And, you know, we'll see this at different times. As we get into some of these big games, you see it in baseball. I've seen it in football. You'll see it probably with the Super Bowl. You know, so they go to a stadium, whoever the PA announcer is, and maybe I'm biased. I just like to hear what the different in-stadium PA people sound like. But all of a sudden, whoever the main TV announcer is, they let them do things like the player introductions. And I'm like, why? Let me hear the real people. Or if you really want to get creative, when it's the All-Star game in baseball or another league, why not have a recording of the players' home PA announcer introduce them. Let's have some creativity instead of just opening it up to the same old folks who are already in the TV booth.
Yeah. So I actually like that last bit there. I think that's pretty cool, man. You get their the home.
PA. Well, that's what I want them to do. That they don't.
That would be amazing. You know, now you really want your guys to make the All-Star game, right? Because you know you get your 11 seconds of fame, you know, riding alongside them.
I mean, there was an old. I mean, there's a lot of famous PA announcers, but probably one of the most famous, was a guy named Bob Shepard for the Yankees forever. Even after he retired, Derek Jeter still used his recording for his intros until he retired. It's got a lot of unique voices, man, and I like to
hear
that.
Hey, what about for the Hall of Fame? When you're inducted into the Hall of Fame, you get to choose the person who introduces you. A lot of people will use their children. A lot of people use coaches. Some will use people they played with. But like you're saying, for the All-Star game, man, what if the individual got to pick, man? I got to my 7-year-old son got to introduce
me. I'd be fine with that too. Just something. I mean. Liven it up.
Yeah, I like it.
Well, speaking of All-Star games, wasn't all stars, but they certainly were stars. Since the last time we talked, the World Series ended. Philly kind of came short. I will say that crowd in Philly, man, they were electric.
That was a good series, man. I mean, I think it played out kind of the way it was anticipated before the series started. They were just a little bit overmatched. The Astros had been the better team all year. They went in with the better pitching. You said the Phillies were the upstart, and when they took a 2-1 lead, it was kind of like, oh, hey, wait a minute here, and they had some hot bats and. You really felt like oh man we might be seeing something here, and then as time went on you just see the better team kind of leaning on them, and they just had more pitching, more arms, more timely hitting, and the Phillies the bats went too cold for too long, Astros outlasted them. Good on the Astros, man. Really happy for. Dusty Baker. I mean, the guy was just like if you stay tuned after the game and you've seen how happy that dude was, man, and just how happy the players were for him. It was really cool, man. I was happy for Dusty Baker, and it's too bad for the Phillies, man. I mean, they had made a real run at it, dude, and they made it really interesting, and. Thanks for a good show, and it was entertaining. Individual games weren't necessarily. There wasn't a lot of high drama moments, in this World Series. But the series as a whole was.
It was kind of interesting because the games. So it wasn't like a lot of baseball is. Some of it where there was a lot of home runs and stuff, obviously. But I'd say pitching. But good pitching was more there, and I actually enjoyed the World Series. It was one of the more enjoyable World Series, just because there was a good steady flow of drama. It wasn't like off the charts, but it was a good steady flow, and it was pretty compelling. I didn't find myself tuning out much.
No, I was glued to the World Series, Yeah, I mean, I was into it, but again, the real tense, high drama moments, it didn't have a ton of those. But and the sportsmanship was high, and the teams seemed to mutually respect each other. The post game interviews, game after game after game, reflected that. Both teams had a healthy fear for the other team, and a healthy respect, and they knew damn well if they didn't bring their best game the following night, they're going to lose the game. So that other team wants this, and they're good. And both you felt that from both teams, that they were like they had a healthy fear of the other guys.
And Verlander finally, you know, got a World Series win.
Yeah. I mean, so, for, you know, we had a little touch on that between him and Kershaw, and it's like, man, how can you be this dominant and have, you know, these many opportunities in the postseason? And you know, man, do you think just law of averages alone would get him some wins? But, yeah, no, good for him.
And I've read a lot about Dusty Baker over the years, and especially now that he won, you know, he's going to get a lot of press. Just seems like a good dude, and you hear that all the players that have been around him, they love playing for him. He seems like the kind of guy that really, I mean, it's often said in sports, but I know the reality that, yeah, coach cares about you as long as you're starting, you know, once you're off the team. But it sounds like, from what you hear from a lot of players there, he really does care about the people that are in his world. And so more power to him and congratulations. Been a baseball guy for a long time, so I'm happy for the guy.
Yeah, me too, Callie.
We'll see a lot of off-season drama to come up with where do some certain players end up. You know, Aaron Judge, a lot more. What kind of, I don't know, what will be the big contract and all the rest.
Yeah, I mean, baseball, I mean, they put on a good show this year, and, you know, they'll go into their off season and I don't know. I mean, I don't know where that guy's going to end up, to be honest, or financially what kind of numbers he's going to be looking at. But, you know, I mean, I know it's going to be astronomical. I know it's going to be big, big money. But, you know, kind of curious where he might end up, if it is even anywhere different.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, does he stay in New York? It's always, you know, that's always the odd thing when a guy goes somewhere that you start to identify with the city. But, I mean, it happens. I mean, right? Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl with the Broncos, so.
Well, it's a little weird because generally it's the other way. So, you know, generally you make a name for yourself somewhere else, and then you go to New York.
Yeah.
You know, that's where you get the big contract. And this is going to be one of the – if he does leave, this will be one of the first stories that I can remember of a guy making a name for himself in New York and then going somewhere else.
You know, speaking of making a name for yourself and also Indianapolis, they kind of made a name for themselves this week with a rather unique coaching move, not the in-season firing. I think Frank Reich's a good guy, and just unfortunate that's the nature of sports. But wow, yeah. what a curveball to bring your old lineman Jeff Saturday in as your new interim head coach.
Yeah, man. I think Ursay's like, you know, just said screw it. And I love the opportunity for Saturday. You know, I love listening to the guy. He just seems like a really cool personality and just a genuine good old boy, and you know, I love that he's given this opportunity, and you know, I do think the players will respond to him. Now, I don't know what you know, man, there's a lot that goes into being a head football coach of an NFL football team, man. There's, you know, a lot of moving parts, and I think, you know, some guys can get overwhelmed. You know, hopefully he can delegate. Hopefully he can get some assistance, you know, with the logistics of it all.
Yeah, well, they got to get some help because I think I read that going into this weekend's game, anybody that's on their coaching staff has not called plays in an NFL game.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, they're going to be drawing some stuff up in the dirt. I do believe that the players will play for him. And I do believe he's just going to go in there and say, well, look, I think you guys all know the story. I don't really know what the hell I'm doing. But if you could back me up, you guys got any ideas, I'm open. And I think he'll just be real with them. And if you can get the message across that we're just going to try our best. We're going to work as hard as we can. And we're not going to lack in effort. Now, there's going to be a lot of knowledge that's missing. But you know, the effort, if the effort is there, we can compete. And at the end of the day, these guys all know how to play football, man. These guys have all been doing this their entire lifetimes. you know, if I'm a cornerback, I'm going to line up across from a wide receiver. And I am going to either bump him at the line or I'm going to flip my hips at 5 yards. You know, I'm going to play cornerback. If I'm a defensive tackle, I'm going to charge forward and try and blow the guy in front of me back into the quarterback. You know, I got some swim moves. I got some spin moves. I'm going to try and get to the quarterback. And if I'm a linebacker, I'm going to try and tackle running backs. And at the end of the day, on a play-by-play basis, these guys all know what their job is. Now, schematically, that's where it's going to be, you know, probably a fluid situation and, you know, the terminology that they're going to use, you know, but they have players, dude. You know, they have good players that know how to do their specific job. Now, they might not have as great an understanding about how their job is correlated to the people next to them as they did with somebody with another coach. But, you know, he's just probably just going to trust in the players, man. And they know it's a, you know, to the hell with it kind of season. They're aware of that.
And, yeah, I think so. And I think what you'll see is, again, right, it's not like he's coming in trying to install a whole new system or anything like that in a week. So I really – and because he's – you know, he played the game, man. I think he'll get a lot out of the players. I think that – you know, what that translates to, I don't know. But I think kind of – I'll say this. I sure missed on this team.
I didn't see. I don't think anybody saw this path for the Indianapolis Colts heading into the season. Anyone who picked that, you know, Ryan would get benched, you know, Reich would be fired, Jeff Saturday is going to be the head coach. You know, let me know who that guy is who saw this coming. So you know, yeah. I wasn't me.
Speaking of seeing things coming, we're halfway through the NFL season. Some, you know, we're at the halfway mark. Right now, there's, you know, 7 teams in each division that would make the playoffs. Let's just give a little look at where we stand halfway through the season. You want to start out with the AFC and talk about the 7 teams that would be in if the season proverbially ended today?
Yeah, I'll kind of run you through it. I like this, Kelly. I like to do a little exercise here, and I want to get your input. Just a real quick, I'll give you a quick little update real fast. Last week we tied on the pick'em. I know I'm going off topic a hair, but just to give you an update, we pushed last week, both won 9, and so I stayed 2 games ahead of you in our picks for dinner. I could just start to feel like my mouth watering, just a hair. So we're halfway through and a 2-game lead. I'm feeling pretty good.
And, well, before you give we go into that, for folks that care, I'll give the update. Even after my stellar trade in fantasy football, I am still in last place, didn't win again. And actually, some of my confidence at the draft came back to bite me. Made a small family wager with a brother, and now I'm going to be paying him $20 because he beat me twice.
Yeah, I won't say nothing. I don't want to keep piling on. We had our conversation. I told you the trade lines were open. We couldn't come to a deal. Yeah, good luck, bud. Good luck, Kelly. Hey, all right, so going back to the playoff picture here. So we'll start in the AFC, and I'll give you the teams that are in currently. What I want from you is I'll give you the next, say, like 3 or 4 teams that, you know, are just out of the playoffs. And I want to know from you if you think any of those teams are going to get in, and if so, which ones. And then I'll have to find out which ones are leaving, you know, depending on how many people you got moving up. So right now, seeding looks like this. The Bills are number 1.
Yeah, well, I sure hope Josh Allen is okay, man.
Yeah, I do too. I think everybody does.
And I do want to give him I'm sure he listens to our podcast, but you know what? He had one of the best answers in sports. Like, he was real, man. when he answered about that and, you know, says, hey, well, you can't win when your team's quarterback plays like, you know, good, dude.
I think that's why people like him, man. He plays with heart, sacrifices his body. He's talented, which, you know, everybody likes people who are talented at what they do. He's definitely that. And he gives everything he has to his profession. He has worked to become who he is. He was not John Elway. He was not Dan Marino coming out. You know what I mean? He's had to earn this, dude. A lot of people didn't believe in him. And I've never heard him one time make reference to proving everybody wrong or chip on my shoulder. You know, he just is a dude who shows up for work with his lunch pail and, you know, does the best he can with you know, what he has. And he just seems like a genuine, genuine dude. And he's a guy that I wish I had more shares of him in fantasy. I hate playing against the guy. But as far as a fan, man, I don't know how you dislike Josh Allen and what he represents. He is just a genuine, hardworking, earned everything that's been given to him. Got a lot of respect for the guy, man. I hope he's good, because there ain't much to offer in the NFL, dude, as far as excitement. And the Bills are one of them, right? But they are not the same team without him. They have a talented roster, but he makes that team go. So
we got the Bills.
Number two would be the Chiefs. Number three would be the Baltimore Ravens, coming off a big win on the road against the Saints. Number four right now is the Titans, who gave the Chiefs everything they wanted. What a gritty team the Titans are. I don't know that they match up talent-wise with everybody, but, man, they sure play their own style of football, man, and I respect that too. They kind of remind me a little bit of college. You know, they're the offshoot. A lot of other people are very similar, and Titans just do it their way, man. We're just going to ride a back. We're going to give it to them 61 times a game, we're just this is who we are. We're tough. We're gritty, and we got a big boy playing running back for us, and that's how we play football.
Yeah, I like them.
Number five right now is the Jets, sitting at 6-3. And then also, we might end up with a whole AFC East playoffs, because right behind them is the Dolphins, also at 6-3. And then right now you got the Chargers, man, at 5-3. And based on current standings, they're the number seven seed. But Chargers got some issues. I think we both thought that they were going to be a good football team. But those are your seven that are in the playoffs right now. Does anyone surprise you of those?
Well, the biggest surprise is the Jets by far.
Uh-huh.
You can go back to our preseason stuff, and I know I was like the Jets. You know, I know I just said, "Oh, it's just the Jets. Whatever, who cares?" But you know, 6-3 is what it is.
Well, and if Zach Wilson can make a stride. Or if he ain't the answer, then if you can get somebody else in there who can upgrade their quarterback play, I'll tell you what, man, that is a good – I mean, it's really, really unfortunate they lost Breece Hall. But they're still a fun, exciting, young, young football team with a lot of talent, guys who could fly around. And they're really not getting much out of the quarterback at all right now. So
no, I mean, I think – and that's why, you know, I – They're positioned to be good for a little while here.
Well, I'll tell you what, Baltimore and Lamar couldn't come to an agreement. You put Lamar Jackson on that football team and tailor an offense around his skill set and pair him up with Breece Hall next year and the defense that they got flying around. I think Baltimore's going to find a way to hold on to him, but – he's the kind of guy that can go in there and take a young football team and maybe make them great. So, yeah, it's exciting for them. They're my surprise as well. Anybody else?
No, I don't think anybody else I would call a huge surprise. The team I think that's most at risk, and it's not just because they're last. I don't get it, man. But the Chargers, they're just, I don't know what it is. They just,
well, injuries is a big part of it, man. You know, Bose is one of the premier NFL or defensive players, and they lost him. And the offensive line has been decimated. They lost Keenan Allen. They're out Mac Williams, and it's like, dude, you know. They're doing it all with.
They got the walking wounded, and I just think that I don't think they're going to be able to hold it together.
Well, if they get healthy, I think they have the potential to still be the team that we thought they'd be. But they got to get healthy, you know. And then you know now you got what's his name, man? I like him, Carter. You know, nice wide receiver. Palmer's got some more. Experience under his belt. You know, luckily, you know, Eckler's Ben Eckler, and you know, he's helping a great deal, man, move the chains and scoring touchdowns. And, you know, if they can get their guys back, you know, maybe. But, yeah, I agree with you, man. I think the Chargers are the ones that are the most teetering because I think the Dolphins are legit. The Titans get the benefit of playing in the South with the Texans. We've already talked about the Colts. And the Jaguars, who, you know, they're a little scrappy, but they're you know.
Yeah, if the Titans were in a different division, I mean, we'd be having a different conversation. But, you know, they're someone's got to win that division. And, they're, you know, that's going to get them into the playoffs.
So I'll tell you what, man. I'm going to give you a couple teams that are currently on the bubble, man, just outside. And, you know, given what you just said about the, you know, concerns with the Chargers and the fact that the Jets are kind of a surprise. So I'll give you the four teams because we're not going all the way down to the Broncos, dude. So you got different storylines. Actually, and I'm just going to pretty much omit the Colts, too. I think the Colts are pretty
they ain't
out
going nowhere.
So the two teams that are immediately behind are the New England Patriots and the Cincinnati Bengals. And both you can make a case for. Of those two teams, who do you think is the more likely to get in?
I think the Bengals. I think that they just – I think they'll continue to find their stride in the second half. And I can't count out Joe Burrow, man.
Yeah, they'll be without Chase for a couple more weeks. They're on bye this week. You know, Mixon was he was one of my boys in our fantasy league, you know, playing the old man and between Davante Adams and Joe Mixon, I had just under 100 at halftime of the morning games between those two guys and felt like, all right, I think I'm doing all right. I got 41 out of Davante Adams and 50 out of Mixon and they're just now going to half. So, hey, speaking of which, is it that complicated? You know, we've had these conversations before, man. And so you chuck the ball to Adams. I think he had 12 targets in the first half. On the first drive alone, he had 6 catches on the first drive.
And nah, dude. So sometimes people, I really think sometimes these coaches overthink stuff, okay? Like, here it is. I got an all-world receiver. Just throw the ball to the guy.
They were up 17-0, Kelly. You know, they say, hey, we got to get Adams the ball. Clearly, that was a game plan, dude. They chucked it to him every play. They drove down, scored a touchdown, kept throwing the ball to Adams, scored another touchdown, kept throwing the ball to Adams, moving the ball, scoring touchdowns. They're up 17-0 to start the game. And then I think Adams had 2 more targets the rest of the game. And they ended up losing that game. They were up 17-0. Coincidence, maybe, right? Maybe one doesn't have anything to do with the other. Maybe the Jags rolled coverage. Maybe they said, we're not letting you throw to Adams anymore. Whatever. All I know is you quit throwing the ball to Adams and you quit scoring points and you lost the football game. It doesn't seem complicated at all to me, man. And the whole season has consisted of this, of like, dude, get the ball to your best players. It's not that hard. Why are you throwing the ball to Mac Hollins and Hunter Renfro and Foster Moreau's and when you have a Davante Adams on your team? Look what you did when you made it a point to throw him the ball. You ran up 17 to nothing.
We had been waiting all year to see this combination. I know you had for sure. And we see what they can do, and then I was actually, I won't say a surprise, because it's the Raiders, and this kind of stuff seems to happen to them, but I'm like, wow, they should just win this game handily, and then, you know, they end up losing.
Yeah, so I'm going to agree with you with your setup. So the only other team that is, you want to talk about a wild card, is truly a wild card, is the Browns, and they're sitting back record-wise in a hole, but they do have a recipe that's going to keep them in games. They can get after the quarterback, they play sound defense, and they run the ball as well as anybody in football, except maybe, or at least, I'd say they're on par with the Titans. And that's a nice recipe, and, you know, like them or not, they do have a pretty prolific quarterback that's going to take over the helm here pretty soon. And when that happens, if he hasn't forgot how to play football after sitting on the bench for 2 years or hanging out at home during all his suspensions and whatnots and inactives, if he can play football like he did before all of this transpired, then that is a team I think that could potentially go on a roll and win game after game after game. So there's a lot of ifs in there, and they're in a hole record-wise. But I would put money on the Browns before I put money on the Colts at this point. So
yeah, I mean, they definitely, again, the issues that went on aside, if the guy can literally, I just don't know, man. You haven't played football in 2 years. So, you know, where are you? But that's, you know, that is the definition of a wild card.
Yeah. So, but I like them better than the Colts. I mean, would you not agree with that?
Oh yeah,
they're behind the Colts currently.
The Colts are going to be going for a new. They're going for a early first round draft pick here.
Yeah, and there are supposed to be some quarterback. You never know, man. I mean, you know, these prognosticators. It's hard to say. So, but there are supposed to be a pretty good quarterback class coming out. You know, some of the guys that I've been watching sure look, you know, like they can play. I'll tell you what, man. Well, we can get into this. We'll switch over to the anything else you want to talk about in the AFC. Anything else that jumps out at you?
No.
All right, let's jump over to the NFC because there's something I want to talk about, but we'll get to it in a little bit. So, number one, the Philadelphia Eagles, only remaining undefeated team in football, and number two is the Vikings. Sitting one game behind them. To me, those guys play pretty quick? Or did they play? Oh, they played already. That's my confusion there, buddy. They played already. So.
No worries.
And the Eagles handled them 24-7. That was in Philly early, week two. So, to me, the Eagles look like a whole step above the Vikings. What are your opinions between those two teams? Because they right now seem like the class of the NFC.
Yeah, I think right now the Eagles are, you know, pretty much a step above anybody in the NFL.
The whole NFL? I wouldn't put them ahead of the Bills at full strength.
Hey, I'm going to bump them up above them, probably a half a step above them. There ain't no man, and the Bills have had a couple of off games. That's just where I see the Eagles.
Okay,
I think
that
they're, you know, they've played pretty much eight solid. I can't remember if they're eight or I think they're eight or although I think they've had their bye. But they played pretty much eight solid games, man.
I need to see them. I know what the Bills can do when they're losing a football game, and I need to see what the Eagles can do because at some point they're going to be trailing, and I want to see what their response is in that. They've been front runners. They get out to a lead. They lean on the running game, play really solid defense, and you know they've been able to use that recipe game after game after game. Eventually, if it's not in the regular season, it for sure will happen in the postseason. At some point, you're going to be down a couple scores. Now,
no, I mean they have. I mean, this is one of the things I've said, man. What happens when you face adversity? And I would say they haven't really faced a lot of it. More power to them, though, that they put themselves in position to not have to face it. So I don't know. I mean, I do agree with you on that point, but I'm also going to give them the credit for doing what's needed to not be in that hole.
Yeah, a fair point. Okay, so number three is the Seahawks, one of the true legitimate.
Then want to talk about surprises. Now, maybe, you know, this is probably why other guys get paid millions of dollars to be GMs and coaches. Maybe this is what they thought and they knew about Geno Smith. If you asked me,
I don't think so, man. I think they got lucky.
Yeah, well, okay, they bet on red and red came up, you know?
Yeah.
I'm trying to decide if I'm more surprised by the Seahawks at 6-3,
yep,
or the Jets at 6-3. They're both surprising for very different reasons to me. The Seahawks, because I just didn't see this. I mean, I didn't know what they had. And you tell me the last time a team traded away its franchise quarterback and probably is playing as good, if not better, than they were with that person. That doesn't happen.
Oh, I don't think. I mean, hands down, right now, Geno Smith is light years ahead of Russell Wilson in quarterback play.
Yeah, so I mean,
you know, going through progressions, making quality throws, staying out of trouble, holding on to the ball. I mean, everything it takes to be an NFL quarterback, Geno Smith is better. So they got all the draft picks and all the players and the better quarterback. So they just, man, they really won that deal by a mile.
Yeah,
so,
but a buddy of mine told me, I'll get it wrong, shout out to our listener in Seattle. He told me that the joke on Seattle Sports Radio is that the Broncos want to come after Pete Carroll for, I wish I had it right in front of me to read how he said it, but basically fleecing them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they didn't get what they thought they were getting. That is one thing I do wonder. You know, Pete Carroll's a pretty shrewd coach, man. He's a smart dude. He's been around football his whole life, too, and he's an old-ass man. And I wonder if Carroll kind of knew that the struggles that had been taking place over the last couple years with Wilson, I wonder if he knew how much of that was actually Wilson's fault and was like, yeah, you got to have him. You know, and like, oh, well, no, we can't let go of Russell Wilson. He's a franchise quarterback. We still want him. What kind of deal can we work out? No, we can't let him go. We need a ton. He's amazing. And, you know.
I think if at these levels, again, there is a lot more, a lot wrong and right in any player thing. But you be around this stuff for all this time and they just know things that we'll never know because we don't even know what to look for, dude. And it doesn't even have to be what you see on the field. It can be the demeanor of how the guy's walking down the hall.
Yep.
That they see in things that, you know, convey something. Or where does he sit in the meeting room or the locker room?
Does practice end and is he out of the shower in 7 minutes and in his car in 11? Or is he hanging around on the field throwing extra passes? Is he, you know, hanging around the facility? Is he showing up early? You know, all of those kinds of things, man. Is he a team dude? Is he there, you know, seeing what he can do to get better? Or is he just doing the minimum and getting the hell out of there? And that's stuff we don't get to see.
So, all right, so we got Seattle's third at 6-3. Then who?
So this is, the NFC's kind of funny, man. It gets kind of choppy. I think we both agree the Eagles are one of the better teams in the NFL. I still have the Bills ahead of them myself at full strength, the Vikings are a good football team. The Seahawks are a legitimate good football team. I think we can say that at this point. And then we get all kind of choppy from here, dude. So the fourth seed is the Buccaneers by way of 4-5 record that is first place in the NFC South.
Yeah, that's like the first place in the AFC South, dude.
Yeah,
you're first in your division.
They're not a good football team.
No.
Did see a little bit of the, if you want to call it Brady magic, I don't know. But, you know, two bad football teams, the Rams and the Buccaneers, played a football game and one of them won. You know, it did it kind of in dramatic fashion, you know, and But that nothing that I saw from either of those teams represents what I think is a playoff team or anyone that with as they are now, there's zero chance that either of those teams can win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, right? Well, sometimes in football, dude, you have bad divisions. And you know what? You're the best of the worst, so you get in.
Yep, so they are not good. But they're sitting at the 4 seed by way of their division. And then the 5 seed, I think, is a sneaky team, and that's the Dallas Cowboys. The way they're built, I don't think they'll hold up well against a team like the Titans or the Eagles or the 49ers, a physical smash mouth team, but they're fast. They got playmakers on both sides of the ball. I think they can make big plays on defense, you know, like pick sixes, sack fumbles, block punts. You know, they got Turpin, where is he at? Is he Arena Football? Nah, it wasn't Arena. Where did Turpin come from? CFL maybe?
He came from whatever it was last year's thing.
So, whatever that was last year's thing. Anyway, they got a good return guy. You know what I mean? I could see him breaking off a punt return for a touchdown, things like that. They got big playability on defense, but I don't think they'll hold up well, between the tackles, between the 20s, you know, that type.
So if they get into a street fight, hands down brawling game, they're going to lose.
Yep.
But they're kind of like the
Floyd Mayweather.
Guy that, you know, can dance and bob and weave and slide in, do something big and escape taking a body blow back from you. If they can play that game, they'll continue their luck. At some point, I do think that you find yourself in a street fight type of game somewhere. And often that happens in the playoffs, and so we'll see.
But yeah, because there's a handful of street fight teams in the NFC. The Eagles are, I would call that. The 49ers, I would call that. To some degree, I would say the Seahawks are that. And then, you got a little more of the high-flying, let's run fast. And depending on how things shake up, they might only have to win one of those games. You know, they might only have to street fight one team. And the other guys, depending on seeding and stuff, might beat each other up for them, right? So, anyway, I just think they're an interesting team. The 6 seed, also in the NFC East. So the East is the dominant. We thought the West, the AFC West and the NFC West, were clearly the where the action was. And as it turns out, we couldn't have been any further from the truth. But the Giants are number 6. You got any thoughts on them?
Again, you just kind of summed it up, man. Again, I don't do it for a living. I was the NFC East. I just misjudged it, man.
Yeah, so they have good records, and just by way of record alone, they can kind of throw it in neutral, man, and as long as they don't just lose out. I mean, the Cowboys and the Giants are both sitting on 6 wins. You know, I mean, you figure you got to get to, 11 and you're in. And, 10 might do it. So, I mean, dude, they only got to win 4 more games. 5's a lock. So just by way of record alone, they don't even have to play good football to get there.
The Giants have been playing good football.
They've been okay.
Not great.
A little smoke and mirrors, man. Yeah, to be honest.
Not great, but good.
But they're like the Vikings. They're winning the close games. They're getting in close games. The Vikings it felt like year after year after year. They lost them all. Every time they were in a close game, they lost it. Yeah. And now this year, kind of some of the regression to the mean is happening, and the Vikings are getting all those wins back now. You know, where they were running at a rate of 2 out of every 10, now they're running at a rate of 8 out of every 10, and they're getting those back. And the Vikings just had to pull out all the stops in order to beat the Commanders. You know, so, and Commanders are, they're okay, but Vikings are 7-1 and, had every opportunity to lose to the 4-5 Washington team last week. So I think that the Giants are very similar to the Vikings in that it's like, yeah, you're winning them and they count and the wins count, but you're not that impressive. And then the 49ers are sitting at 4-4. also dealt with some injuries. They're going to get some key guys back, though, man. A couple guys on defense. They are, I think, one of the more scary teams in the NFC to Philly's chances. What do you think?
Yeah, honestly, so if you ask me right now, like if I would put the Eagles number one, I would probably put, except if I had to rank all these teams, I'd put the Eagles number one. I would actually put the Cowboys number two. I would put the 49ers, even at 4-4, at number three when they get their players back, just because of what they've got going on. And probably the Vikings at number four.
Yeah, I just kind of feel like all those teams are bunched together. I think the Eagles are clearly the best. And then the Vikings, Seahawks, Cowboys, and Niners are all kind of like, I could see any one of those teams on winning a game.
Yeah.
So depending on who's got home field advantage, depending on, you know, weather and other factors, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if those teams played each other. It wouldn't surprise me who came out at victorious, you know. So, you know, would be surprising if the Eagles lost to one of those teams to me in the playoffs, but you know, like as things sit right now, but the rest are all bunched up pretty close. I think the Buccaneers are trash, and I think the Giants are a little bit, like I said, smoke and mirrors. But they're winning, and they get that counts. Okay, so man, I'll be honest, Kelly. I mean, the only thing I think these are all the playoff teams. The Giants, because of what I said about the record and just like the mathematics of the whole thing. And then these other teams I think are better than the rest. So right now, the team in eighth that's just out is the Atlanta Falcons. And they're at 4-5. They're actually tied with the Buccaneers record-wise, but the Bucs have the tiebreak. So, they're right there. They're a half game out of the playoffs.
Yeah, so it won't surprise me to see them flip-flop with the Bucs and get in. And if you ask me, like, if, you know, which team's going to get kicked out, it would be that one. I don't think Tampa Bay is a good football team. And I think, you know, they've each got, what, 8 games left, I guess. Mm-hmm. I'd say that Tampa Bay is probably going to lose more than the Falcons.
And I haven't really jumped into their schedules. But I'd have to pull up their schedule. But I imagine the Bucs should have the tougher schedule. So based on last year's records,
I haven't pulled it up, but
let's see once.
I just think the magic for the Bucs has worn off, man.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like they're just going through the motions to me. The other team that there's the Rams. Okay, so Washington's actually 9. The Rams are 10. The Saints are 11 and the Packers are 12. Cardinals are 13 I want to go all the way down to 14 because that is the team that to me, you want to talk about a dude making a jump. And I think it's legit. And heading into this season, I think we're starting to see what I thought would have happened sooner. And I'm talking about Justin Fields and the Bears. Now, I understand this year is probably not their year. They traded away Roquan Smith. That's a huge loss. I think he's one of the better defensive players in all of football. At the middle linebacker position, I mean, he's definitely right at the top. And, you know, so I don't know that they're going to have all the pieces they need to make a run. But I'll tell you what, man, what Justin Fields is doing is impressive, and I think it's sustainable. And they added Claypool to give him another weapon. And you see what that's done for Mooney, too. So
yeah, no, so Fields is this is what we were expecting when they drafted him. And maybe it just took – who knows why. I do think the last few games, for sure, we're seeing what we would have expected. I don't think it's going to be enough to salvage anything this year. They could be good. I think they've got a franchise quarterback, knock on wood. Well, you know, as a Packer fan, I guess I don't want him to have one. But as a football fan, I do. You know, it's better when teams are good. And we've seen him start to live up to what people expected.
Yeah, he's just fun to watch, man. Ran for, I think, 178 yards. And, you know, they kind of... you know, just open things up, man, and said, go out there, do your thing, dude. And he's really shining. And like I said, I don't think these are flukes. I think this is who he is. It just, like you said, it just took longer to get there than we thought. And, you know, when you know, it was supposed to be a 5-hour drive and we're 7 hours in, it's hard for me to believe that we're close, you know. And now I think I think Fields, you know, has turned a corner, man. And the added help of Claypool, I think, is great. You know, the fact that he's just, you know, out there running around, man, and making plays. You know, I think it's really cool, man. I'm happy for him. I'm, you know, obviously, you know, being, like you said, being Packer fans, I don't root for the Bears. But I just like to see people be successful. And I'm happy for him that he's you know, found some game, you know, that, I mean, I think he should have had.
Yeah, here's the deal, I think, right? I mean, so, and actually I want to talk about this in another week, because I've just been looking a little bit at previous drafts, and, you know, the NFL is so geared towards the quarterback, and just look at, you know, quarterbacks and how the draft classes have been. But most of the people have some, obviously, level of ability, quite an ability. I think some of them, obviously, there's different talent levels, but some guys just never can put it together at the NFL level. The game is maybe too fast for them, what is expected of them, because you cannot get by on talent alone at the NFL level. In college, more so, because you will outmatch half your opponents. I mean, just be physically better. But that's not the case in the NFL. And I think whatever was going on with Fields, I think, you know, maybe it's finally just starting to click. You know, and you know that, dude, in anything you're doing, whether it's sports or something else, you start to hit a sweet spot where, you know, and they always talk about, the game comes to you and you're kind of in control. And whether that's, like I said, football or something else you're doing, at some point it starts to click in your head.
Yeah, I mean, I've had various jobs over the course of my life and different industries. And, you know, you have a period of time where, you know, you may not even understand the industry at all, right? And so you got, man, you got all this crap to learn. And it's like, dude, I don't even know what I'm doing here. And then all of a sudden one day, you know, you wake up and you're like, hey, I think I got this. You know, I get it, man. And some of the stuff that was really holding you back, you've mastered all that. Now you understand these things. Now you can answer these questions, or you can fix this thing. You know what I mean? And you had to learn how to do it. And, you know, that pulled your focus away from other things, you know, being able to like, let's just stick with sports. It prevented you from, it's like driving a car, Kelly, you know, when you very first start, it's like, man, you don't even know you can't remember which lever is the blinker. You know, you don't remember how you turn the windshield wipers on. You know, the gas is on the right, the brakes on the left. And eventually over time, all of that stuff just becomes second nature. You stop thinking about it. Like it doesn't even like enter into your mind anymore. Now I'm free to focus on merging traffic. Now I'm free to, that's why kids get in more accidents. You know, they have so many things to think about. You know, I believe in this, you know, I have children and I've had these conversations, you know, with mom or, you know, and just my belief that, it's our responsibility as parents to, to prepare them for life. That is your job, right? As a parent, your job is to prepare your child to be independent someday. And, you know, obviously you want to keep them safe. So obviously you want to, you know, show them love and you know, give them a happy, you know, comfortable childhood as much as possible. But it's also our job to prepare them. And, you know, I don't want my child, when he goes to college, to have to learn how to do laundry, to how to learn how to wash dishes or shop for himself. Or I don't want all of life to be dumped on him all at once when he's 18 years old. I want to feed it to him in a little bit in pieces, you know, so that when he goes to the next level in his life, he has all these other things are second nature to him. He already knows how to cook. He knows how to make food for himself. He knows how to do his own laundry. He knows how to drive a car and like I said, go shopping and hopefully to some degree understands the value of a dollar and saving and managing his credit and some of that stuff. And I want to give that to him in pieces as he's growing, you know, so that when you hit adulthood, you're not getting the whole cart of shit dumped on you. Can I say that on the radio? So sorry about that. you're not getting everything dumped on you all at once. And I think for like NFL players, you know, they go through this period where, you know, man, they got to learn how to do laundry. They got to learn even where the laundry, you know, where the washing machine's even located in the house. They got to figure out where's the bathroom, where's the meeting room, where do I park at the stadium? You know, what time do I have to be there? You got all this other stuff, and then eventually the day comes for a guy like, you know, like Justin Fields, where all of that's second nature. That's not part of my thought process anymore. On the way into the stadium, I'm not trying to remember which entrance I have to go through, which gate do the players go through in order to park their vehicle. That's all second nature to me now. I'm not thinking about that stuff. You know, I'm not thinking about anything other than, you know, are they going to play cover two or are they going to mostly be in zone this week? You know what? You know, I'm thinking about next level stuff. And I think, you know, for a lot of athletes, when they jump to the professional level, they're bogged down with a lot of the, like I said, the logistics of things. And once that disappears and they get comfortable, you know, then now they're free to be themselves. And it's nice when it works out that way. I think you've seen that with Josh Allen. A lot of quarterbacks, you know, or players in general, man. They hit a spot and they flourish.
Well, yeah, and I think that, you know, that's part of the whole thing of figuring this out. Who has what, you know, it's not just who has what talent, but who, you know, when you're looking at players, who do we assess has the ability to go through this and make these transitions and all the other things. And, you know, this is,
and so much of it's unknown too, you know what I mean? Like you think you have a good character guy, but the guy you think has a good character also has never had $2 million in his checking account.
You don't know what I mean? I mean, none of us can truly say how we'd behave if someone started giving us $20 million.
Yeah, and you don't know until it happens, you know. So,
to any listener that wants to try it out, I'll happily take it and tell you.
Well, and I will say this. There's a huge difference too, man. So, you know, these guys are coming out of college. They're somewhere between, on the low end, you know, to 20 and a half to the high end, you know, 22, right? And maybe the highest of ends would be like 23, you know, except for the Kurt Warners or the outliers, you know. And so, man, I'll tell you this. I'm 47 years old currently. Dropping $20 million in my lap today would have an entirely different outcome than had you dropped $20 million in my lap at 21 years old, dude.
Oh, yeah. So,
I mean, you know, these guys are dealing with it when they are not – most of them are not mature enough to even understand, you know, where to get started. Now, they're given support, and there's people who, you know, help them. The NFL does a good job.
There's also people that try and take advantage of them, though. I mean, yep. Right? I mean, and it's an environment that I don't think, unless you're in it, we can really imagine. Because not only – some people – you got help if you are willing to take it. But you've also got, and you hear about this, you talk to players, right, and or read about it. I don't talk to them, but you read about it where, you know, suddenly every family member they've ever even thought about having is saying, help me out, and hey, I got this great investment opportunity for you. You know, I will say I give the NFL credit. I think they're putting more around the players to try and help them. And I think that's important.
And I think they do. They recognized how, you know, when these numbers started getting ridiculous, they started recognizing that, hey, man, you know, this is an area that we forgot about. And, you know, I was joking with my old man, you know, the Powerball just went and it was a single ticket winner. And, You know, I'm like, dude, that guy's phone's ringing off the hook, man. You know, Johnny from elementary school is calling him up, a dude he hasn't talked to in 30 years. Is like, hey, remember me? I'm Johnny. We were like best friends, man. I miss you, dude. How you been? Well, how come we don't talk more?
Oh, yeah.
You know, everyone's coming out of the woodwork that you've ever had contact with in your life, you know, with their hand out. And like you said, has a great idea for how you could spend their money.
Well, I've got a great idea that we'll wrap this podcast up for the week. Give me some great topics I want to talk about in more detail over the next couple weeks here.
Well, we got 3 weeks left of college, and I'll be honest with you, man. I mean, NFL, you know, we just went through the playoff picture. There'll be some movement. I actually am kind of on board with all of your thoughts as well. You know, we'll see if the Patriots or the Bengals, you know, we'll see how they play. If they can rise in, we'll see if the Jets can hold on, you know. But I feel like the NFL, man, we're kind of in a holding pattern for a little bit. And, you know, nothing's going to be decided in a week. It's going to take more like a month.
I don't expect a lot of change in the NFL for, you know, the next 3 or 4 weeks, unless you see some big injury. I think it's just a lot of the positions will just, you know, it's just shuffling the chairs on the deck. But, you know, we'll see.
The place that I do think is going to be exciting over that same time is college. And I think that's where my excitement level is right now. And I think that there's some big games coming up. You know, there'll be a team that wins out and could find themselves in a really nice position at the end of the year. I don't know who it'll be. I don't know if it'll be Oregon or SC, you know, maybe even UCLA. You know, and there's some big games coming up that are going to decide. There's some fights that are unavoidable. So Ohio State and Michigan are going to have to play. That's all there is to it.
I know for my sport, you know, the time I allot to sports, I'm looking more at Saturday than Sunday right now. I pay attention to the NFL, and I watch parts of the game, but, you know, I want to be out and about. It's right now I'd much rather, at least for the next few weeks, sit down and watch a full college game than most of the pro games that are on the table.
Yep, I'm in the same boat, man.
Well, all right, Chris, we'll pick it up again next week. And thanks to all of our listeners for listening to another episode of the podcast we name later. And have a great week, Chris.
Hey, thanks, Kelly. You too, man.